You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Geekscapists, you know how much I love you, don't you? And that is why you're about to watch the Morbius Geekscape special. That's right. I make all sorts of sacrifices for y'all. I bring y'all free product. Hopefully this is like your favorite podcast because I give it to you every week and have for 15 years. So I want to thank you for being a part of Geekscape. I want to thank you for your dedication. Maybe this is your first Geekscape. I want to thank you for just downloading us and checking us out. So it doesn't matter how long you've been listening to Geekscape or how dedicated you are. I want the point to be that I love all of the listeners, maybe the viewers who are on YouTube, Twitch, or Facebook. I love all of you. And because of that, we make sacrifices here on Geekscape. And sometimes those sacrifices are, do we go see Morbius so we can tell our audience whether or not it's worth seeing? Yes, that is a sacrifice that I will make. I will go see Morbius to tell you about Morbius. Was it a sacrifice made in vain? Is it possible that I enjoyed seeing Morbius? Well, you're going to have to strap yourselves in for those answers. They're coming right up on a brand new Geekscape special. We're talking Morbius. Hey, Geekscapists, welcome back to a brand new Geekscape. I get so excited to do the show for y'all that I just forget English and I start rolling through words as if they're all one word, and I end up with a supercalifragilisticexpialidocious without even that level of pronunciation. You see how I do? You may think, hey, Jonathan's been doing this for 15 years. He's good at it. He knows how to speak. I do not. I have to consciously slow myself down in order to speak clearly to all of you. It is something that I am consciously doing throughout the broadcast, and I'm not asking you to appreciate it. If anything, I'm just glad you're here. But I would like you to actually appreciate some of the sacrifices we do make for you around Geekscape. And as I said, we went to see Morbius. That's right. Ian and I went to see Morbius. We'd talked about it for months, and Sony kept delaying the Morbius. I don't know why. I don't know why they'd delay it, but we can talk about it, and we will talk about it. We're going to be talking about Morbius, and all we're going to be talking about is Morbius. I would say there's a spoiler warning on this episode, but you're probably not going to go see it. so just know we're going to be talking about Morbius, and there will be spoilers, and it probably won't affect your enjoyment of the movie one way or another, whether or not you see it. All right. So here's Ian. He was down at WonderCon yesterday. So let's actually catch up on his experience at WonderCon. Ian, how are you, man?
Good. First of all, I have to say, you know, you're acting like you're suffered so much for the Geekscapists about going. I mean, you hounded. You went on and on. I don't think a day went by in the last certainly 6 months that you didn't talk about us going to Morbius and how excited you were to go to Morbius. Okay, there was a
I'll
moment.
I'll tell you what, guilty as charged.
I mean, down to like, you know, my wife had a work thing And you know, it was an issue about what, you know, who was going to watch my stepson. And you were like, you got to figure it out. You know, like,
Ian,
it
you got to figure out. I got to see Morbius on Thursday.
In fairness, we discussed whether my 12-year-old stepson should go. And we all decided that we should not subject him to that.
As a human being or as a 12-year-old?
Both. But there was no need for that. I didn't tell you. I gave him a choice morning of, and he's like, no, no, I'm good.
Your 12-year-old son, stepson, your 12-year-old stepson had the choice to go see Morbius with us and not, and he made the decision not to go.
Yeah.
That's it. You're raising him right, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Raising him right.
I hope so. Mind you, he's a huge Marvel fan, but, I mean, look.
Did you tell him that Sony said that this is the next Marvel legend?
I didn't tell him. I felt like he could, you know, judge for himself.
I mean, Sony said it in their advertising. Well, look, this was the next
Marvel. It's tricky,
legend.
Not to get ahead of ourselves, but, you know, we're going to get into the...
Marketing?
The mid-credit scene, you know, where the one mid-credit scene like sets up the other mid-credit scene.
Let's not spoil the mid-credit scene and the work of art that the mid-credit scenes are, because they do something that no Marvel film has ever made.
I mean, listen, if we
talk... Let's wait to talk about
that. We will, because that's probably the most important thing that we discuss in this whole podcast is going to be that.
Okay. Well, you know. Let's actually like roll it back and talk about WonderCon. Like, we will get to Morbius. This is a very important episode, but Geekscapists,
there will be blood.
The show. We did used to talk about comics and other geek things.
We did. I remember that.
More so.
Well, I don't remember.
Marcos Pena is already like, hey, thank you for your service. And Jim Pugnarelli says, you and Ian are my heroes, taking cinematic bullets so we don't
this
have
is
to.
What I try to explain to people, Jim. I have people going, like, why would you do this? Like, so the other people don't have to.
Yeah.
Look, you know, I mean, honestly, as I think anyone that's listened regularly knows, I've been reading comics for a very, very long time. I've read, you know, and particularly Marvel-wise, I've read maybe not all, but the vast majority of Marvel comics I've read. And, you know, there's still that part of me, the little kid who's like, I can't believe this stuff's being made. So even when it's not made well, look, I want to be able to A, see it, see what they did, and I want to have an informed opinion. So as a rule, I want to see the thing, you know, even if it's garbage, I want to be able to say it's garbage because, you know, and have my opinion. And I'm going to say this about Morbius, okay, before we even really get into it. It's actually a good adaptation. The big question is whether it should have ever been made, because who needed that adaptation? That is the question.
In Geekscape, again, we'll get into the details. I do want to hear about your WonderCon, but I will say right off the bat, I agree 100% with your assessment. It was a good adaptation of a comic book character that we didn't really care one way or another about, other than when they would show up in Spider-Man comics.
Right.
Like, why did they make this movie? Well, having said that they made the movie, I multiple times found myself turning to Justin, who was sitting between us during the movie, and saying, should this be this competent? Like, this is a... I walked out of the movie and Heidi said, how is it? And I said, it is spectacularly fine.
It's fine. Yeah, I was conflicted. I didn't hate it. It's fine. Exactly. It's fine.
It is miraculously fine.
It's incredibly on the nose and cliche.
Yes.
It's what we said. It feels like, and you actually sent, you know, an article that I thought was really telling, but for the guy's general point of view, but his points were valid. The article was defending Morbius because he really liked it, but he made a general point, which I said the same thing at Venom. It's like, it felt like, remember when it felt like a canon movie, right? Canon made movies in the 80s and 90s? You know,
yeah, I mean, honestly, I'll go one further. It felt like the first Blade movie that Stephen Norrington did before the standards had been set, because by the time we got to that first Stephen Norrington Blade movie, nobody had a lot of standard for like, oh, it's got to be a Marvel.
It wasn't as good as the first Blade, though.
It was like, okay, this is what a Blade movie should be.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously Blade 2 is the uptick in the Blade series.
Yeah. And then the third one was
The third one is what the third one is. And this could easily become the third one.
Yeah. Well, I thought I said that to you on a text thread, didn't I? About, I compared it to Blade and all that, but,
No. I was not offended by Morbius. I was puzzled by the existence of Morbius, but the movie exists. And I will tell you, if you enjoyed the two Venom films, I think this is better than either Venom film.
And that was interesting to me because I agree. The first Venom, I was really annoyed and mad in it, you know, but it's incredibly campy and it was funny in a lot of places. And you didn't feel the way I did. See, I thought the second Venom was better because I thought they doubled down the things that worked in the first Venom, you know.
There were things?
It's just fun, okay? I just laughed and it's just over-the-top fun. Now, here's my biggest complaint about this movie. There's so little levity in it that, like, even in the trailer, they had a joke that they pulled out, specifically referring to Venom. You know,
the Venom joke's in there where he says, "Who are you?"
I'm Venom, and then in the trailer it was, "Oh, just kidding," and they pulled out the "just kidding."
Yes, you're right.
So they used a different take, yes. And I'm like, "So he's like, I'm Venom," and then just it kills the guy, and it's like, seriously, like, why remove the levity from the scene?
And they have scenes in the trailer, like mainly of Matt Smith walking, where you see Matt Smith in the trailer, and you're like, "Oh, great, Matt Smith's in the movie." He plays the bad guy in this film, but in those same shots, he's digitally altered to look like a vampire in the actual film. When you see Matt Smith like turn evil into the evil vampire version of Matt Smith, it's the same shots in the trailer. They're just devamped to not spoil in the trailer. And I'm like, there are plenty of other shots of Matt Smith in the movie that you don't have to have the dramatic vampire shot devamped that you use in the movie. I mean...
Well, by the way, it's not that it's devamped. It's that they took the shot they shot before special effects got it.
Right.
You know, it's not like, you know, Hulk, you know, versus Hulkbuster in Infinity War, you know?
Right.
Where they actually did different VFX on it.
Totally different shot.
It still boggles my mind that they did that. But yeah.
I'm not a fan of this film. This film feels as unnecessary as it does when you're sitting or watching it, but I think Ian and I are of the same page that we totally had fun watching it, mainly because I was with you, dude, like this myself.
We totally missed Mr. Science 3000 this thing, and you know.
By myself, this would have, I would have felt really sad.
Not as much fun as The Spirit.
You and I did The Spirit was like, we had to yell during The Spirit We had to have fun during The Spirit. We had to do something. And you know what? I just want to go on record as Geekscapists, you witnessed this. 2-3 weeks ago, I had The Spirit executive producer and Batman executive producer, Michael Uslan on the show. And I asked him for our money back, Ian. I just want to let you know that like I went to...
I've asked FJ for our money back so many times.
You've asked FJ for the money back?
So many times.
Yeah. Okay, so we can talk about Morbius. I also want to talk about this horrific story you told me about WonderCon yesterday.
Oh.
You went down to WonderCon.
Look, you know, I mean, of course it's L.A. Traffic's bad getting down there. You know, looking at the panels, I didn't see anything that was all that interesting. I took my stepson. He hadn't been. And, you know, parking was rough. Ended up parking at the Sheraton. $50 to park.
That's the scariest thing.
Yeah.
That's scarier than anything in Morbius.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then, you know, and then the floor is fine, you know, like, you know, walk the floor. It just felt kind of sad. So my stepson kept saying, oh, is San Diego like this? Like, no, you know, San Diego has all of that. There was actually a lot of comics, which I thought was pretty cool. You know?
I like when the cons go smaller. I feel like the artist alleys and the different.
Well, it was that old school comic book feeling, you know. I mean,
those get room to shine when conventions get smaller.
Well, yeah. But and the problem is, look, that stuff died because of eBay. I mean, time was pre eBay. I used to go down to Comic Con with a list, and I would usually spend like one of my first days going through, you know, spend a couple hours going to different people that had comics. There was a lot of them and finding stuff I was looking for, you know, and then like, you know, and then a different day I would spend, you know, walking the floor just for, you know, floor enjoyment and seeing what's there. But, you know, I would be on a mission at first.
But when the big studios aren't doing WonderCon, because Disney's got D23.
Right.
Seen Spot,
big studios there, nothing like that. And for a 12-year-old kid, like, that's what I was like, yeah, none of that was there. You know, the Astromech thing that they had, there was a booth there. They actually make Astromechs, and like it's life-size units who are like buzzing around remote control and making all the sounds and popping open, and they were amazing.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, I hope really cool. Comic-Con. We'll be at Comic-Con, Ian. Okay. We put in for the hotels already.
Oh, okay.
And And I'll find out, I think, in the next week or two what the exhibitor hotel situation is. But
I feel every year it feels like a change. It used to be that you had an idea already, you know, as attendance.
By February.
Yeah.
Before they released it for everybody in March, we would know by February what our...
But I'm saying, now they haven't done it, right?
They just pushed everything because I think ultimately they were still on the fence through Omicron,
okay,
whether or not it was going to happen. And so it is... I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. We're going to be at Comic-Con.
Well, they did WonderCon, so I'm sure they're doing Comic-Con.
And I think they were waiting for I think they had to really rush WonderCon together because of the Omicron situation. And then everything at all the San Diego Comic-Con decisions were clearly waiting to be made until WonderCon had been wrapped. And now that it's wrapped, maybe we'll find out in a week or two what our hotels look like. And I think by the end of April, hotels will open up for everybody. And I'm excited. I hope that Astromech company is there. I think that because of the pandemic, there will be some exhibitors, longtime exhibitors, no longer at Comic-Con. So I think there'll be some new blood on the floor. I hope that new blood is not like weird stuff that doesn't belong at Comic-Con. That happens sometimes. But we'll see. I told somebody yesterday that if they want to go down to San Diego Comic-Con, I think that having a badge is probably the least that they need. Like just existing in San Diego during that period and seeing different installations.
Oh, it's true. Well, that's the thing. Fantastic. Comic-Con's become this thing that outside of the convention hall, so much of really cool stuff that honestly, I'm guilty of not spending enough time with that stuff because I just get too caught up in going inside and all that. But you're right. Like you don't need a badge for any of those things. And it's some of the much cooler stuff. You know, it's the kind of stuff. So here's the thing, what's happened with Comic-Con, and we're derailing the Morbius special with this conversation, but you know, okay. maybe that's best.
I can wait. Sony kept pushing off the movie. We can push off the
discussion. That's right. But, you know, for years and years, you went to Comic-Con, you felt like you were in these panels and it was special. Now, literally, while you're in the panel, Deadline and the other news services are literally posting what's happening. Like, I always laugh because I'm sitting there and my phone is buzzing with an update of what I've literally heard a minute before. And
you would come onto the floor and record with me the Hall H updates because you were in Hall H, and you would come back and we'd do a little update for the
way
podcast.
Way back when, yeah.
And, became and irrelevant. Now it's like, I got it, Ian. Like, we're good. You don't even have
to. Oh, I'd come out and see you, and you would tell me everything I just saw.
Right. And that being said, we're complaining about cotton candy on this one because I'm really looking forward to San Diego and
the experience
and
is great.
Like WonderCon had just been the stepbrother.
And it still is that. It's just, I mean, maybe less so, you know, like it's, you know, some distant cousin thing. When there's not much going on. But what I want to say is, you said I was complaining about cotton candy, but what I was adding to that was, and yes, you know, it's gotten to a point where what's in the panels, like every now and then there's something that's exclusive just for there. It's maybe it's one or two of the panels in the whole con. That's about it. Almost everything else gets released. But there's so much else going on at San Diego Comic-Con that is not online. You know, the installations of things. And mind you, I mean, yeah, you probably have to wait online, all that, unless you have
some kind of socialization.
But and the experience of being there, exactly. There's so many people. It's so much fun. I mean, at least pre-COVID it was, you know, that it's like it's the gathering.
Mm-hmm.
No one has known we were among you until now.
Well, not the Juggalo gathering. There's nothing like the gathering of the Juggalos. That is its own experience. But there's a little bit of that at San Diego. There's none at WonderCon. WonderCon, you're right. It's just like you're in the convention. The convention's not doing your thing. There's some cosplayers outside. And other than that,
I'm just wondering if any of the listeners got my Highlander reference that was clearly over your head. But
no, I got it. Oh, okay. I got it. And I agree with you with San Diego Comic-Con. There can only be one. It's San Diego Comic-Con. Christian Blatt, he is hosting our new brand new show, Geekscape, as the Geekscape Book Club. We're mainly talking comics. He says, I enjoy Comic-Con Revolution in Ontario, a small town east of LA, because it's more reminiscent of the cons I went to as a kid. Yeah, it's a pretty manageable sized town. And I got to tell you, if y'all are watching this on YouTube, we're going to be in an hour after Ian and I wrap, we'll be back on the YouTube channel talking about this book right here, Frank Miller's Year One, as part of the Geekscape Book Club. We should have Ian on a future episode of the Geekscape Book Club, but basically we pick a book every episode and we talk about it. I'm not a regular host of that. That's Christian and Caitlin's show. but I'm on the first episode, and we'll be talking about, I think, it, I mean, it's my favorite Batman story, I think, is Frank Miller.
So you like Batman? I
like Batman a lot. I don't like when Frank Miller comes and defines Batman in a spectacular fashion, like in year one, and then that becomes the definitive bar for every Batman creator to attempt for the next 30 years. Just let Dark Knight Returns and Year One be its thing, and let's hear some individual new voices, not attempts at more Batman Year One. All right. We're talking about Morbius.
Oh, yeah.
Year One. Ian, I thought that this might happen when we started this episode, where we went to Morbius. We thought it was fine. We thought
Did we forget about it already?
I was thinking about the movie in the last 2 days.
I didn't come out of it traumatized. I didn't come out of it insulted.
I wasn't angry. I didn't feel like my 2 hours was wasted. And then I found a lot of it not memorable over the course of the next 24 hours.
Well, as I said,
hours.
So when I say on the nose, it's like there's no real development of anything. Like this happens and this happens and this happens. And all the things you expect to happen, happen, and they happen immediately. As soon as you think to yourself, oh, this is where this is going to go, it just goes there right away. They don't wait. There's no layering. It's just, yep, and then this thing.
So Geekscape is Michael Morbius has this blood disease, and you literally open up and he's in South America capturing vampire bats, whatever. You see the sequence in the trailer.
I honestly have no idea why. I don't know why he
I don't know what's happening.
I don't know what the thing was with the there's the blood, and they come get through the cage thing. So they capture it and he's fine. I don't honestly understand that sequence at all.
We flash back to him as a kid, and he's a brilliant kid, even as a kid with his blood disease. And he has a friend. He makes a friend who's also suffering from this blood disease.
And then there's this quirky thing about he calls all the kids that have been his roommates Milo, so they're all Milo. But then that kid grows up to be Milo, even though he's Lucien.
But
I don't
know. The point is,
they're trying to be weirdly quirky.
They become lifelong friends, and this Lucien character, Milo, is wealthy and helps fund Michael Morbius's adult experiments towards creating like synthetic blood, which is great.
And he's such a great doctor. Blood. He wins the Nobel Prize. You see him there winning it. But then afterwards, I think he left.
He walked away from it. He stood them up.
Yeah. But we saw him there. So that didn't make any fucking sense.
Didn't make any sense. We see him at the Nobel Prize award ceremony. And then we see later that, he's got such a cool attitude that none of this stuff is important to him. And he stood them up. And it's like, what? He was sitting on the stage. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Maybe it's not the best
weird
edited
edit.
Movie.
No. But the point is, he now has this idea that vampire bats hold the secret to the missing piece of his DNA that will cure him of this blood illness and cure his buddy Milo, his wealthy buddy Milo, who may have gotten his finances from ill-gotten means. There's some rough characters Milo hangs out with. He's going to do an experiment that will not be approved because it's human experimentation, but we see it work in a mouse. He injects a mouse with this serum and it seems to work, to give the mouse, health and powers, whatever. So they get on this tanker ship in international waters, and it's Michael Morbius.
Can I just say the mouse too? Whatever happened to the mouse? Is it out there? What's it doing?
I don't know. The mouse is out there solving crimes. But the second he injects that mouse and you see the mouse spasm and die, you're like, that mouse is coming back to life in about 2 minutes.
Absolutely.
And you're going to be like, oh my God, it worked. Ah! Oh my God, it worked. So you obviously have the scene where the mouse dies. It's like, oh no, the experiment failed. And then like 2 minutes later, the mouse is running around and you're like, of course it worked, because we need a movie. So anyway, they find themselves on this tanker ship.
So they make this point that they're going to international waters. That's where they can do whatever they want.
That they can experiment on human. Michael Morbius can do this experiment on his own without like violating his codes.
But it's really unclear what is he going to do. And also don't forget that the doctor assistant, who's clearly going to be a love interest, she makes this big point about how wrong it is and can't do it. And like just immediately after she's there, no conversation, nothing, all, cheerleading along.
She is
complete role reversal. Why?
Down to experiment.
Like what happened?
It's insane. She's a single mother and she needs the gig, but you never see her kid. You see her cat.
I got nothing.
Yeah, no, you got nothing. This movie has a lot
was
of
she
scenes.
She's a single mother?
Like,
did she say she had a kid? Did I miss that?
Tyrese does when he's in when he's doing the detective work, the very thin detective work. That
did I black out?
The movie. When the bodies start
detective
to,
work,
when the bodies start hitting the floor.
But they were FBI agents, right?
Yeah, but it's still detective work. They're still investigating.
Well, but by the way, why were FBI agents investigating the murders and the international wars? And I didn't get any of that. They were in international waters. Then I get that they called a mayday. So we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Ian, let me just explain what happened.
You go ahead. You keep going.
Who aren't going to see this movie.
All right. Keep
Michael,
going.
Okay, so these are the people that are on this ship where Tyrese and the doctor are going to perform this experiment.
Not Tyrese.
It's... Or, I'm sorry.
Morbius and a female love interest doctor.
Morbius and his love interest as, like, scientist. They run
they've been a little flirty, but nothing's happened while he's
nothing
sick.
Crazy.
Because, you know, they have to do the Captain America, you know.
So, he's got to be ripped first.
Yes.
Before she's interested.
He's totally meek.
Ian, please. I'm never going to get through this. It's the two of them and a bunch of mercenaries on this ship.
Right.
It's the two of them and a bunch of mercenaries.
Why are they mercenaries?
I don't know who's actually captaining this ship.
Why are they mercenaries? I'm the captain now. Why are they mercenaries?
It's a bunch of dudes with machine guns.
Why?
I don't know. But Ian, please. They're playing poker while the two doctors are experimenting. And then he puts himself behind like this sealable glass just for safety. And then he starts wigging out. One of the mercs comes in, sees the attractive doctor, starts acting like a creepy merc. You know that's going to happen.
That was
important. This
dead. It was important that we see that they're assholes because when he kills
or they
them,
don't deserve to die.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So it's all right that
so
he kills them because they're assholes.
Here's where the Morbius starts Morbiusing. They're like, Dr. Morbius is no longer in this protective place on the other side of this unbreakable glass. And they go, Dr. Morbius? They're worried about him. And they open up. And the guy with the gun walks in. They look around. And then she looks up. And Michael Morbius is now Morbius. And he's a fucking monster. Like, he looks like a vampire. And he's hanging from the fucking ceiling.
Like the worst kind of vampire. Not like a
worst kind of
looking,
vampire.
You know,
not
Franklin Jella
vampire,
Dracula. You know?
Not Anne Rice vampire. No. She is like a murderer. Like, he is
and
like
definitely not none of that Twilight bullshit.
No. And he kills the shit out of this merc.
Oh, yeah.
And the other mercs come and he kills the shit out of them. He kills the shit out of all the people on the boat, but this doctor who's now unconscious. It's a murder spree, right? She still loves him.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Later in the movie, yeah. when he's hot, Jared Leto, she totally does not care that she saw him turn into a monster. Has seen him turn into a monster multiple times during the movie. And
she doesn't care.
Is down.
And I'm sitting there confused. I'm like, I didn't know Nightcrawler was in this movie.
Oh, he's bamfing all over the place. Suddenly,
but he's not bamfing.
Super strength.
Yeah.
The super strength, I'm like, okay, the vampirism gave him super strength.
Sure.
And all this stuff. All he needs to do is drink blood, which he's horrified by because he's still a good person.
But to be clear, so he's zipping. It's sort of like a flash effect, except it's misty and sometimes it's ahead of him. And it's like.
It feels like a bamf because he's got bamf smoke.
I don't know if it's.
But he is. He is like.
Is it nocturnal emissions? Is part of me? Is he farting?
Like
I don't know what's going on. There's stuff all over the place every time you move around. Sometimes it's purple, sometimes it's red. I don't know what's happening.
Quote unquote super speed is dictated by whatever he's wearing. If he's wearing purple, it'll have purple smoke. If he's wearing red, it'll have red smoke. It's just like a cool effect. And it reminds me of like when Sonic the Hedgehog would rev up and like go super fast, like bounce out, like super
fast. Well, I'm saying, similar to Flash, except, but it wasn't really that. It wasn't like the, you know, the images that are behind, because sometimes it's ahead of him.
No, he kind of ping pongs. Morbius kind of like ping pongs in this.
It was all smoky. You know, it wasn't like his body smoky. It was up and over and around.
He doesn't just jump.
It looked like a Nightcrawler bamfing and the smoke coming afterwards.
I called it the fart bounce.
Yeah.
I call it the fart bounce. The vampire
farting,
farts.
Yeah, I said. I literally
would
said.
Cause
like,
him to bounce it.
I don't know what's going on.
And so he's ping-ponging all over the place. Later on, he decides that he can like ride the wind and he can fly now.
Yeah.
And you see the scenes where like the wind is picking him up. I don't know if in any of his studying of the changes has gone over his body that like he at any point dictates the fact that maybe his bones got hollowed like a bird's and he can ride the wind.
Again,
I don't know, but
it's just in the comic that he can do that because I guess he's bat-like. You know, that's the
and
whole thing.
Superpowers.
Yeah, and don't forget that he can summon the bats.
He can summon the bats,
and as you said, and the full on Daredevil radar sense.
He's got radar sense. That makes sense. He's got a bat radar sense.
Yeah, and they make the ears get really bat like when he does it. Yeah, and
his ears turn into like these little like rivets.
And I guess his eyes, like, is he going blind when that happens?
His eyes turned into like gooey ink drops.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's very visual.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, but honestly, some effects were decent.
Listen, this movie did not. This movie was fine.
It's fine.
We're just gonna keep going back to zeroing it out. The point is, Geekscapist, he calls a mayday after murdering everybody on this boat. But the Doctor, he jumps ship because he's horrified by the fact that he just drank a shit ton of blood, and he's got questions to answer. And he jumps ship. He gets to land. Tyrese and the other detective, they find the ship. It's got the Doctor on it. Doctor's got some explaining to do. Morbius has some hiding out to do. He's got to find out his powers.
The feds come in. I don't really know why. Yes, people died, but, you know, it's like, yeah, they're looking for Morbius.
They
died in international water, so I guess that's the thing. They're investigating.
It was off the coast of Long Island. I guess they're the closest. Like whoever smelt it dealt it. I don't know how the rules are.
But wait. So they're looking for Morbius. Meanwhile, he's gone back to the lab, which is Horizon Labs out of Spider-Man. Because why? Because they have the Spider-Man stuff. So let's throw Horizon in. No Max Modell, which I thought was weird. But they threw Horizon in there just as a little Easter egg, okay?
That being said, the trailer had an Oscorp building. There's no Oscorp building in this movie.
Well, you know, it's probably somewhere.
they're just doing whatever they want.
Maybe.
Okay, where are we? We got the Tyrese investigating
deaths.
Smith comes to find him.
So let's be clear. We've seen Matt Smith as an adult before this scene. They're both sitting together. Yeah, he's wealthy.
And he hangs out with bad guys.
Yeah, and Morbius has told him this is the one that's going to cure us because they might not have that much time left, and you know it's fine. So Morbius now has been studying it. Matt Smith comes in, going, "What's going on?" And oh, you're great. You look great. Give me a no, get out of here. Morbius does a little morph on his face, yells at him like, "You have to go." Like scares him to leave.
You don't want this curse,
right? You don't want this. So he leaves. Cut to a very nice nurse is walking down, you know, a dark corridor, and we don't see who, but somebody kills her.
Somebody kills her in very vampiric fashion.
You know, at this point, it could only be Morbius, you think, but immediately Justin and I looked at him and like, well, clearly it was Matt Smith.
Yeah. Okay. So, Ian, there were two vials left of this super serum.
And how would Matt Smith have known that that's what it was to take it?
So, listen. When Morbius jumps off this boat after the Mayday, he's got these two vials of super vampire serum, puts them in his pocket and jumps ship. We then see those in the lab before Matt Smith. And they're very obviously put in the lab, like, for Matt Smith to find. And then Matt Smith leaves, but we don't see Matt Smith pocket any of them. And more troubling than not seeing Matt Smith pocket either of the vials of super vampire serum is we don't see Morbius notice that the two most important things that he jumped off the boat with...
Right.
We're missing. There's no acknowledgement that Morbius he's smart enough to like.
The director made
detail.
A choice that they wanted to play this weird, don't tell
Maybe
the audience
Morbius
what's going
him?
On thing. Just so they could do the weird Usual Suspects, you know, Carza Soze move after prison. So, after this scene, Morbius is like leaving trying to leave the lab, and the feds come and see him. And
I'm trying to arrest him.
Right. They arrest him. And then they find out that this woman died too. So they automatically arrest him. It has to be him.
She died like the people on the ship.
Now at this point, Morbius, by the way, we left out the part that he's drinking this artificial blood he made that he's award winning for. And that's helping. But the amount of time that holds off his hunger is getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah. Sooner or later, he's going to have to use human blood.
Right. And there's a big distinction between the blue and the red. In the red, he's much more powerful on it and all that. Okay.
That being said, like, they didn't have to hide the vial switcheroo. They could have just had Matt Smith clearly become the bad guy.
So they arrest him, and next thing you know, you have Morbius sitting in jail in orange, you know, the orange jumpsuit, the whole thing. They've already told you he's down to like 4.5 hours he has to have this stuff, but they've arrested him. Now, You get arrested, you get processed, you get put in a cell, all that. It doesn't happen in 5 minutes.
Well, let's not explore your past with the law, okay, Ian?
Okay, like, but so I'm telling
you. Let's just say that this is the movie. The more troubling part is that Matt Smith comes to visit him as his friend.
And just says he's his lawyer.
Claims to be his lawyer. He says gets he's in. His lawyer. He walks in, hands him a packet of blood that right. he just walked into a jail with.
Right. Mind you, again, time frame. How did all this happen? He's gotten in. He knows where he is. And all these things have happened. And Morbius hasn't hit his time frame that he needed blood. Because obviously not feeding him blood in jail.
I'm really more troubled by the fact that
he's never been in general lockup. He's never been around any other prisoners. Nothing. He's just in his own cell.
Ian, I'm not going to listen. It's like the FBI thing. Like, I'm not going to get into the legal proceedings here.
You don't really want to get into just how stupid it is.
No, what was stupid was that Matt Smith walks in.
It's all stupid.
And he just hands Mr. Morbius it's all stupid. This packet of blood.
So meanwhile, Matt Smith walks in with the cane limping.
Yeah, but he's giving him this blood so that Morbius can superpower himself and burst out of the prison. But he's got the cane, but he leaves the cane when he leaves, and Morbius is like, wait a minute. He doesn't have the cane.
Well, wait,
that motherfucker took my venom.
We don't see that he did that the cane in Morbius' cell until Matt Smith is acting like he's still limping, but he did it without the cane. And then they do the scene that's straight up that last scene in Usual Suspects, where Kevin Spacey, Carson Soce, suddenly stands up, you know, calm and is walking fine, and he's starting strutting all that. It's straight up that. Matt Smith is totally doing an homage right there.
And so Morbius seeing the cane there and realizing that Matt Smith had done one over on him and now was like super bad guy.
Because he knows he's the one that didn't kill
breaks
the nurse,
out of the prison. Okay, so Ian, my bigger question, because beyond all the legal proceedings and this and that, my bigger question is, if Matt Smith has the serum and is super vampire now too, why doesn't he just not visit Mr. Morbius?
Because he wants Morbius to be with him. He wants them to do it together. Because he does.
They want to be bad guy.
That's what he wants. It's very conflicted. Like it's competitive, but it isn't. The bad guy, Matt Smith doesn't see himself as a bad guy. He just doesn't give a shit. Oh, and by the way, I wanted to say, when he's a kid, they actually do this scene with these bullies, okay? And, you know, and so young Matt Smith, you know, has a cane. These bullies start picking on him, and he fights back, and they make this point that he hits one of them, and they're like, oh, because he has a killer instinct. So that's how they're supposed to be telling us, they're telegraphing that, oh, he's going to be bad because he actually beats up a kid that's picking on him. You know, I had no problem with it, and it was like 4-on-1, no. You know?
It was fine.
So, yeah.
A lot of this movie was fine.
Fine. But no, so the whole point is, so here's the joke. So Morbius breaks out of prison. Now, normally in any other movie, you know, this pacing, you figure you sense the problem. No, immediately they fight.
Yeah.
Like he breaks out and finds him immediately on the street and they fight for the first time.
Using radar?
Yeah. But immediately fights him, you know, and that doesn't work out, whatever. And Matt Smith gets away. And, you know, and then he does a bunch of other stuff and, you know, they have to do the inevitable
makes
bar
his own
scene.
Lab.
Yeah.
Morbius makes his own lab.
Right. Which they had to do that. And he, you know, he had to beat up drug dealers.
To use their drug lab to turn into a blood lab.
Right.
And you see his genius. You see his mechanical genius when he takes.
Well, they make a big point when he's a kid that he's basically MacGyver. So he actually takes a counterfeiting lab. He turns, he creates a centrifuge. I don't know.
It works. Kind of cinematically, visually.
If you were MacGyver, you could do it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work in any basis of reality. But we're not talking. We start talking about reality when we start talking about a Morbius movie.
I guess that's true.
Like this movie, it exists.
Well, wait a second. Which reality? Or am I jumping ahead?
We'll get to that. The whole point of Geekscape is Morbius ultimately puts his friend down and kills him by summoning a bunch of bats.
He has to use his expertise to create, you know, the thing that's poisonous to bats. You know, to stab him in the heart.
He stabs Matt Smith in the heart.
He uses his genius.
And we have a little bit of a hint at a sequel because this woman who's now like totally into him, he kind of vamps her.
Well, so basically, of course, the bad guy takes the woman and, you know, puts in a position where she's going to die. And she's like, oh, she's dying, but don't waste it. So Morbius feeds on her. But they do this cutesy thing where they kiss and she bites his lip and gets a little taste of his blood, which in regular vampire stuff, taste of the blood does it. We have no reason to think that would work here, but
he's a living vampire.
Yeah, I guess this stuff's in his blood. So, yeah.
I guess he can vamp people?
I guess.
The two that we've seen get vamped did it through the science experiment with the science serum.
Right. But I guess it's in the blood?
Do it?
Okay.
I don't see how Matt Smith didn't just make a shit ton of vampires over the course of his murder spree.
It didn't, because that was the saliva, wasn't the, and if they died, I don't know, maybe.
Playing a little loose with the rules. The
blood, I don't know.
That being said, Ian, how much of this was from the comics? You said it was a pretty loyal, faithful.
Well, the Morbius, the origin is exactly that. Doctor, the sickness, wanting to cure. He has the friend, though the friend doesn't become one like him,
Continue. Continue your thought.
So a lot of it, the whole people knowing about him, some of that is he is an award-winning scientist. So as I said, I feel it's fairly faithful, I'm not bothered.
But without Spider-Man, this is kind of a necessary movie.
To be clear, Spider-Man's not integral to Morbius' origin. It's just that Morbius is introduced in Spider-Man and is Werewolf by Night. Yeah. And in fact, there's actually a period in the Spider-Man comic where Spider-Man's blood actually helps him more than other blood.
Mm-hmm.
And Spider-Man actually lets him have it a number of times. They've gotten away from that, since. But
because Michael Morbius and Peter Parker, for the most part, are friends. In a lot of the comics.
Yeah, ish. Yeah.
Peter at least acknowledges that Michael Morbius doesn't love this blood-sucking life.
And it's Morbius in the comics a long time. It's very much he's cured himself, but he's looking for a cure to what the cure was and all that stuff. And, that was,
Yeah. In the comics, he's not strictly a villain.
No, he's neither.
Yeah.
Morbius is definitely not a villain in comics. He's definitely more of an anti-hero. He's afflicted, but he still tries to do good, where he can. He's not exactly a hero, although there were times, most recently in the Beyond storyline currently, they just had him pop up. And, he looks to help.
Yeah.
He
is helping. Yeah, he helps, what's her name, Colleen Wing.
Daughters of the Dragon,
yeah. I kind of like... Here's the sad thing about that Beyond storyline that we're having in the comics. I'm kind of enjoying the spin-off stories more than I'm enjoying the main storyline.
I get that.
The main storyline is kind of getting long in the tooth.
Well, it's about the
spin-off stuff's kind of fun. Yeah, it's got one or two issues left in it. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I'm not going to... I don't do the thing where I complain too much about Spider-Man comics because they're still Spider-Man comics. Yeah, I love Spider-Man.
The point is that the most recent appearance of Morbius, that's where he was.
Yeah.
And straight up
good guy.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the Morbius serum got into the lizard and had a crazy bat lizard.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. I remember.
Ian, this movie exists, and then this movie clearly exists in the Sony Venom universe because there's references to San Francisco. There's references to Venom. I just want to finish a couple sentences during the podcast, I host.
I mean...
And where do we go from here, Ian?
Are you done with your sentence?
Yeah, well, I cover my mouth. I'm done with my sentence.
Okay. All right. So, here's the thing. So, if anyone that saw the trailer, the thing that they really pushed to make, this movie exciting was... Michael Keaton's going to be in the movie, right? And so you're like, oh, great, Vulture. And we're all wondering, what does this mean for the multiverse? And we saw that long before No Way Home came out. What did that mean? How does this work? Is it the same universe? Is it not the same universe? We've all been going back and forth. We did that with Venom. When Venom referenced
Spider-Man, it got a little fishy.
It was all, we've all been wondering. After No Way Home, I know I came out of No Way Home going and I'm here and I'm like, maybe they make Andrew Garfield the Spider-Man of the Venomverse, and bring him back. There's been a lot of buzz there. So the movie ends and we haven't got Michael Keaton. And then you get the first mid-credit sequence. And it's the sky is just out of No Way Home, that it's broken and cracked. And suddenly in the jail cell, which the one right next to the one the Morbius was in, because it can't be the same one because, he broke the glass or whatever, or the wall, But right there, Michael Keaton pops up, Adrian Toomes, he just appeared, and he's like, and somehow he's aware that he's moved universes.
Yeah.
So I guess Adrian Toomes has cosmic awareness now.
Yeah, he doesn't have any of the disorientation the other characters do when they deal with this.
He knows exactly what's happened. He's in a different universe now.
Yeah.
And then you see a Daily Bugle headline that Adrian Toomes, who like just appeared out of nowhere, people know who he is. His name means something to someone, but he doesn't belong in jail. So they let him out. And you're like, okay, I guess. So you watch that scene. You're like, all right. So they're basically saying, hey, Sony owns Spider-Man, but they shared Spider-Man with Marvel. So he's in the MCU, first in Civil War, the Marvel movie, and then in Homecoming that Sony put out, but Marvel lent them Tony Stark. They lent them, you know, Happy and, you know, Pepper. And
but that's
Kevin
where Adrian Toomes.
So that's Adrian,
Adrian Toomes. So he committed crimes in the MCU.
So and we've established also No Way Home that Venom also had come over at the end of Venom 2. And then again, in the credit sequence, we didn't get Venom in the main movie. In the credit sequence, they just threw in the little, okay, he didn't interact with everyone else. He was there and fine. He left the little symbiote behind if they want to use it in MCU, but he went back to his regular universe. So we know that Morbius and Venom are in the same universe because, as Jonathan already said, they made reference to the incident in San Francisco and he actually called himself Venom. Okay. And now here's Adrian Toomes. So now it's, okay, fine. They've brought him over. So you're already thinking, okay, they have the established villain. Why do a whole other version if they want to do it over here?
And we can goes leave back now. We can leave the theater now.
And we sit and we're like, well, you know, we got to write it out, these credits.
Oh, it's kind of lame.
And then pops up again. And now it's Morbius is driving a car through the desert.
Cool. Maybe we get another villain. Maybe we get a new villain for like the next movie.
I'm thinking, is he going to find Mjolnir in Broxton, Oklahoma? Like, why is Morbius in the desert?
I don't know what's happening, but we got our Adrian Toomes. Maybe we get something new here. Maybe we get maybe we get another version of the Sinister Six. Maybe he meets the Rhino.
All of a sudden, the Vulture swoops in. Now, I don't know. I thought that the whole point of the Vulture's costume, you know, his equipment was he got the alien tech, right? That would be special and not something you could just easily recreate.
And also back in the MCU.
In the MCU, that's my point.
That's where the Chitauri attacked.
Right. So, but somehow he has it in the other universe that he came through, you know, in his prison garb, you know,
the
still
Venomverse.
In prison.
I'm calling it the Venomverse, yeah.
Yeah, the Venomverse, fine. But anyway, he swoops in and he stops Morbius and Morbius comes out and they have this conversation. He directly references Spider-Man, you know, because Spider-Man is so bad. Spider-Man's the bad guy. Now, Spider-Man wasn't so bad at the end of Homecoming that he gave him up, right? Like it seemed like at the end of Homecoming, maybe Adrian Toomes, you know, realized that, okay, the kid was all right and all that, you know, but, you know, where he's talking to the clearly Scorpion and, you know.
He saved his life.
Yeah. But anyway, and he says, you do it.
What do you say, Ian?
He actually says they need to have a team up, you know, the Spider-Man.
He asked Morbius for a team up.
Yeah. And he says,
got to have a team up.
And he says, we need to get a bunch of other people. Right?
Yep. So, need about four more. Yeah, they need about four more.
So straight up, which we've known forever, and what I'd like to discuss is just this Sony Marvelverse, right? This idea that Sony said we have Spider-Man. Well, no, but it's Sony said they have Spider-Man, so all these characters, all these things related to Spider-Man, for years and years they've been developing things. They've been developing Sinister Six. And the issue's always been, hey, how do you do it without tying it to Spider-Man? So they basically said, all right, well, we've established these characters. We're going to use the whole Doctor Strange multiverse thing to say, whoever we want to use, we can pull out of the Spider-Man movies. We don't have Tom Holland. I feel that Adrian Toomes direct referenced Spider-Man, and he said it in a way that Morbius should have known who he is.
Mm-hmm. And Morbius has never been to the MCU. He is strictly Venomverse.
So it's still not clear. Now, in the first Venom, they make reference to the reporter in New York, right? And we've actually seen things on walls about Spider-Man, right? This subtle Easter egg.
In the trailer.
Was it only in the trailer?
Yeah, when you see Matt Smith walking past those.
And that's in Venom.
Posters.
No, that's in Morbius, but in Venom.
Right.
In Venom, it references also. So the point is that there easily can be a Spider-Man in this universe. We haven't seen him yet. And so I'm saying Andrew Garfield.
Is the industry saying Andrew Garfield?
I've heard rumbling. Here's the thing. You know, I always like to reference, you know, the line in The Player that, you know, the rumors are always true. There's definitely been talk about it. Whether a deal's been made is a different thing. But yeah, there's definitely talk about it. It's the thing that would be great. Now that people, they weren't planning it. No. From the get-go, no. Okay? But after the reception of No Way Home, and in particular, people wanting to see more, you know, I think the general consensus is, you know, I rewatched them before No Way Home with my stepson, and the first Andrew Garfield movie, I actually thought was, listen to me, I thought was decent movie. He's not a great Peter Parker because he's too cool, but it's a decent movie. And the second one is so much, not nearly as good as the first one. Okay. Still same issue, other issues. Okay.
Right.
But what I've always said is he's actually a great adult Peter Parker. He's not a great teenage Peter Parker.
No Way Home showed that.
Yes, and that's exactly right. No Way Home.
He was great. We got to that
place like, you know what? Yes, I want to watch this version. Okay, I still want Tom Holland. That's something different. But this version, yep, I'm into. I want to see that. You know, give it the right filmmaker. So, and you know, whether it be, I mean, listen, we all want to just make the third movie. But what will make sense is whether it's Sinister Six, Venom 3, whatever it is. I think clearly the intention is to try to pull Venom into a Sinister Six also. Because, mm-hmm, you know, double down, whatever. I mean, it's money. And I think that, you know, I mean, do I like the idea of Morbius in it? I don't. I don't think we get another Morbius movie. There's probably, you know, there was no reason for this one. But fine, you have the character. Fine, put him in the Sinister Six. But he's not, I agree with you. What was motivation to be in? He's not sinister. And he doesn't hate Spider-Man.
He's a good guy.
So I guess we'll see. But at least he's been asked. By the way,
he was literally asked by the Vulture.
No, and then he helps. I mean, who knows?
So the Sinister Six in the Venomverse is Venom. It is the Vulture. You still have access, if you're going with the Andrew Garfield version, and the Andrew Garfield exists as Spider-Man here, we still have access to
Lizard.
Even though he's been depowered, we have Lizard and Electro.
And that version of Rhino?
That version, the Paul Giamatti Rhino. Yeah. Marcos Pena over on YouTube says, Andrew Garfield was the best thing about the Amazing Spider-Man franchise. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously. I like Emma Stone. Andrew Garfield's just a phenomenal actor.
Yeah.
The material was, not my favorite, but yeah, I think Andrew Garfield was phenomenal, and he proved it in No Way Home.
The thing is, the first Amazing Spider-Man, I mean, it's a great, like, high school relationship movie.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's 50 days.
It's really wonky. I feel it's wonky as a Spider-Man movie for your reasons. Like, I feel like it was very Dark Knighted. Of, you know, it's like Sony was like, "What if he's cool and a loner? Well, then he's Batman. Yeah. What if he's got mysterious things that happen to his parents? Well, then he's Batman
because he's charming. He's right. Just not Peter Parker.
He's definitely not Peter Parker.
The cool skater kid, you know, who's mysterious. I mean, let's cross Peter Parker with James Dean.
Yeah, but No Way Home. Andrew Garfield, having the failures of having lost Gwen Stacy, that's Peter Parker.
And by the way,
he did a great job.
If you look at, you know, what Marvel Comics did with Peter in the 70s and 80s, like adult Peter is cool, you know, he's good looking, you know, he dresses decent, you know, like he has some game, you know, that's good. It's fine with it. You know?
Was he your hero growing up? Was he who you modeled yourself after?
No. No. Dick Grayson.
You got game though. Dick Grayson. Okay, so let's play. Like, okay, the Sinister Six in the Venomverse, the Sonyverse, is obviously Vulture, maybe Morbius, if Morbius suddenly loses his entire consciousness and is like, I want to be sinister, which didn't seem like it was going to happen. But we got Venom. We potentially have, but I mean, Electro, even though they've been depowered, Electro, Lizard, Paul Giamatti's Rhino.
Maybe this universe has a goblin. You said that.
Maybe this universe has a goblin.
You know, it supposedly had Oscorp.
It definitely had Osborns. Right. The Scorpion was left in the MCU.
Right. Maybe he fell through too. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But, is this your sixth movie?
We also had Shocker in MCU.
The MCU. Know? So we pull those people through.
Maybe.
Does Marvel let that happen?
Maybe.
I think who has to be in a Sinister Six, in your opinion?
Well, not having Ock you know, you want off.
Doc Ock usually puts it together.
Yeah, so that one's tricky, but I mean, it certainly can be Vulture. You know, you don't have to have Goblin. I mean, there've been goblins. It could be a you know, a Hobgoblin.
There've been Hobgoblins. Yeah,
you don't need it. But yeah, you know, Sandman also you want. I mean, he was cured and from a different universe. You know, but
so you're gonna give us Hydro Man instead?
Maybe you can.
Hydro Man's been in Sinister Six.
Been done.
He's like Sandman, but with water.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you know, I mean, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
There are choices. There are choices.
Wait, I'm forgetting somebody. Who we're getting? Kraven's gonna be in the Sinister Six.
Oh, that's true. And Kraven,
because we're getting
a
Kraven movie.
Yeah, and he's been in a lot of Sinister Sixes.
Okay, so the Sinister Six. In the Venomverse, the Sonyverse, is going to be Vulture, Kraven, clearly, maybe Michael Morbius, definitely Michael Morbius, we'll check the box office. They got to put Venom in it for the box office.
I think they do Electro.
Even though he's depowered, they find a way to put Electro in it. And ideally, they're fighting Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. I think if you put Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, who cares, is on the team, it'll be a fun movie.
I wish we had a more true Rhino, because Rhino would be great. You know,
it just
like
means
not
somebody
just a mechanical rhino.
Yeah, and I don't mind the mechanical rhino either.
Yeah, I guess it's just like Iron Man, but it's just not really a rhino, you know. But yeah, but because a real rhino would be cool.
I think that that little siren
is coming to get you,
Matt. No, Matt Kelly adding another podcast to the Geekscape Network is what that is, and we did have one added to the Geekscape Network, not just the Geekscape Movie Club that we're starting in an hour on this YouTube channel, but Matt started an episode where he and Matt from Weedus, you remember that band Weedus? Yeah. They talk about Weird Al Yankovic songs. I swear that's something that exists. That's they break thing. Down Weird Al Yankovic, Weird Al Yankovic albums. Let's have it. Yeah. I have no control over Matt Kelly. Jim Pellegrinelli says, speaking of no control over anybody, he says this movie basically exists because Sony has the Spidey AP and will ride it into the ground as long as it still makes money, which is how they've always treated it since Sam Raimi.
And to be clear, after No Way Home has made so much money, that's not going away anytime soon.
No.
You know?
We're going to have Spider-Man movies from Sony coming out the eyeballs.
When No Way Home does $800 million domestic, you know, think they worry about throwing $60, $70 million to make one of these schlocky things because maybe it'll do okay?
We're getting a Madame Web movie. Why not?
Oh, I was actually discussing that with my wife. My wife actually knew what that was and was like, I don't get it. I'm like, there's nothing to get. It doesn't work as a comic. It's like, she's just a peripheral character.
Doesn't work as a comic. No.
It's like,
he says, I think the Chameleon would be a good candidate for the Sinister Six.
Oh, leave Mysterio out. That's true. Does he come back? You know, that's a thing. Sure. Does he have to come across universes? Wouldn't that be a great irony that he made, he pretended, you know, being from the multiverse and then he came across?
Jim Pagnoli says the original six was Doc Ock, Mysterio, Kraven, Electro, Sandman, and Vulture. And we have almost all of them in the Sonyverse, except Doc Ock and Mysterio.
Well, so, I mean, again, it's...
Sandman was MCU. Oh, no, Sandman was Toby U.
Sandman was Toby U. And Mysterio is technically MCU, but, you know, because he can come over the same way Vulture did.
What a messy situation we have here. Luckily, the Kraven movie will clear it all up.
Sure.
Okay, Geekscape, thoughts from Ian Kerner.
Did they cancel that Silver Sable movie, or is that one still happening?
We might as well get it.
Black Cat and Silver Sable together, which sounds stupid. Yeah. And then,
Silk movie? Silk?
Well, Silk's not a bad idea, but again, if you try to do it absent Spider-Man, it's dumb.
Yeah, that'd be like making a Morbius movie absent Spider-Man.
No, it's worse.
Okay, final thoughts on Morbius, Ian, which I think were the thoughts that we started with.
It's fine. You know, if you just want to generally see comic book, first of all, if you've ever read the comic, that's a reason it might be interesting to see it. If you've never read the comic, you don't need to see it at all. And maybe you want to watch the mid-credit scenes on cable so that you're just familiar with them because of what's coming next, but maybe not, you know? Or if you just, you know, if you're fine with that old school feeling, and that was what that one article that, you know, we passed around said was, you know, you want to feel nostalgic and go back to when they made a lot of these movies. When they made these movies, they were schlocky in the 80s and 90s, and that's all right. You know, it's just fine. But to me, that's like the kind of thing you watch on cable.
Yeah. It was, you know? It felt like Dolph and Punisher level of MCU-ness.
Yeah.
Geekscape is.
Or maybe Ray Stevens Punisher. I don't know.
Yeah. No. So Morbius is a movie that exists. It's a movie that we weren't entirely insulted by, and we didn't feel like we wasted entirely our 2 hours because we were sitting there laughing with our friends in the theater.
Thomas Jane Punisher, I felt, had better production value.
Yes, it did.
The Ennis stuff was really good.
But it didn't have a great script. It didn't justify a lot of the choices being made, and it felt like it was shot in Tampa, Florida, based on the production people wanting to be in Tampa.
I never told you. I had a conversation before. I read that script long before it was shot, and I had a conversation. I had steered the writer of that movie to the Ennis stuff, and he said, "I think you're going to like this." And I literally read it and looked at him and said, "What's this Tampa shit?" He said, and he said, "It's tax credits. I need to do it." You know, it's like,
yep.
I was like, you take Punisher's origin out of New York, it doesn't work. It's not the same. Yep. So the whole DEA thing, all that stupid shit. It's like, it was money. It was, you know, it was a different time, you know? I know.
Yeah.
I straight up said, I said, no, because the Ennis stuff is great.
Florida tax credit. Yeah.
I mean, the stuff, I don't say lifted, it's homage, you know? I mean, using the stuff, they owned it, but all that stuff was great.
This is how Roy Scheider leaves the film industry, is with this movie.
Yeah.
This is what y'all did. Okay. Yeah. All right. Ian, Morbius is a movie
same
that we
saw. Same cast in New York. It's a much better movie.
Ian, please. We can't go back to the Punisher Thomas Jane version. I forgot it exists. I honestly many times forget it exists. And I think ultimately in time, I will forget this exists.
No, you won't. They won't. They're not going to let you forget.
Sony will not let me forget Morbius exists. But I'm glad I saw it. And I'm glad I told you all about it.
So you're not sorry about Morbius?
Nah, it's fine.
Sorry about Venom.
Venom, I enjoyed this movie more than I enjoyed either Venom movie. Did. Absolutely. Geekscapists, we'll be back soon to talk about many things. We're loving New Moon Knight. And we've got some Obi-Wan coming up. And then obviously we have Sam Raimi's Doctor Strange 2.
I hope it's Sam Raimi's Doctor Strange too.
The rumor is Sam had his edit. Now Marvel has their edit, and we're going to see the Marvel edit. Which, damn, I want to see the Raimi edit.
Yeah. Release the Raimi cut.
Release the Raimi cut. We're going to be saying release the Raimi cut here on Geekscape, unless the Marvel cut, which is about 30 minutes supposedly shorter than the Raimi cut, is awesome. And we're all happy. And then we're just excited to see a director's cut on a Blu-ray somewhere. And we'll be happy with that too. It's all fun. And this is all stuff that we wish we had when we were 12. And we have it now. So
let's not complain too much about
cotton candy.
All of it.
Young Jonathan never wanted a Morbius movie, but he got a Morbius movie. So here's a Morbius movie. Enjoy a Morbius movie if you can. It's getting dunked on. All right. Ian, till next time. Double salute. Geekscapists, subscribe, share with your friends. And we'll be back on this channel right now in about an hour to talk Batman Year One. So subscribe on the podcatchers to the Geekscape Movie Club, and you'll hear that conversation if you don't want to hang out on video. All right, Ian. Thank you, sir, for bringing your expertise to this expert film.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye, buddy.
Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.